Today's guest, Kendra McDonald, immersed herself in the outdoors during a turbulent time in her life. Her journey visiting every Virginia State Park led to a turning point in her career and a new outlook on the future. Kendra shares her experience as an AmeriCorps member and discusses how her training is preparing her to conserve and protect the rare and unique ecosystems of Virginia. Let's go. Kendra, thanks so much for joining us on Virginia Outdoor Adventures.
Thanks. I'm glad to be here.
How would you describe Virginia State Parks?
Oh, Virginia State Parks are amazing. So I have always been a visitor for my local Virginia State Parks, and I'm lucky enough to live in the Hampton Roads area where we have about 6 parks within a half an hour to an hour of my home. And they've always just been a refuge, a place to just get away from things for a little bit, commune with nature, They offer amazing programs and history. So they've always just been a place to escape. And I've always been a park visitor. Wherever I travel to, whatever state I'm in, I always try to find a state or national park to visit. But I'm lucky to be in Virginia, where the Virginia State Parks amenities, I think, are pretty amazing, kind of far above and beyond what I've seen in most other states I've traveled to. So they're one of our gems here for the state.
I think it's right. And you are sort of in a special corner of the state where the parks are pretty unique compared to the rest of Virginia.
Oh my goodness, that's true. Yeah. My home park is First Landing State Park, which is in Virginia Beach. And it's an unbelievably spectacular place. It has a lot of special significance in that it was one of the first 6 Virginia State Parks that were founded in 1935 and actually constructed with the Civilian Conservation Corps. And I think about that almost on a daily basis, whether I'm at the park or driving past the park, because a mile on either side of the park is tourism. It's, hotels and condos and the Virginia Beach oceanfront and communities. But First Landing exists as sort of this ecosystem, this maritime forest that's sort of a time capsule of what things were like before all of that, commercial building and tourist industry formed around it. So I feel really fortunate that that place is still intact and that ecosystem is fairly protected from everything else around it. And some of the things that we have growing there are at the farthest north that you will find it. So things like Spanish moss and bald cypress trees can really be found no point further north than that very spot. Not even 5 miles north will you find Spanish moss. So it's a pretty neat area that's protected and insulated that way.
That's right. It's definitely a gem. And also that park has some pretty unique history connected with it too, doesn't it?
It does. Yeah, it does. It actually was originally opened as a seashore state park because it was on the Chesapeake Bay and had the largest attraction of the beach and the seashore. But it was renamed First Landing, I think in the late 90s, maybe mid to late 90s, to reflect the historical significance of the First Landing. So you probably know the names of John Smith, Captain John Smith, then Christopher Newport. And they were some of the actual founders of the first permanent English settlement in Jamestown, which is literally just up the road, just up the waterway from First Landing. So we know that they actually first landed right at the beach in the Cape Henry area of First Landing. So it's pretty significant to think of, that those kind of historical footprints being on the beach in that area. So they spent a few days there, were kind of met maybe not so warmly by the native population, and they were pretty exposed on the Cape. So they got back in their ships after refilling their water supply from the freshwater cypress pools and continued on their way to Jamestown where they settled.
What I think is so significant about our state parks, not only are they gorgeous, but the landscape of Virginia was really instrumental in forming the history of Virginia, which in some ways is the foundation of the history of the United States. And so things like the waterways and the fall line and other geographic features that we have here really shaped how events happened historically. And if it weren't for those geographic features, history might have been different.
That's absolutely true. That's absolutely true. And I think one of the things that I'm struck with too, just in our area, it is having the significance of the Chesapeake Bay and seeing the Chesapeake Bay watershed and its reach throughout a huge portion of the state is pretty cool to think about, you know, the origin of that and the impact of the water.
Right. So you're currently assigned to First Landing State Park as an AmeriCorps member. Is that right?
That's right. Yes. So not only is it my home park as a resident of the area, but I'm actually participating in a national service program with AmeriCorps where I get to serve in Virginia State Parks, helping with, you know, conservation and resources of the park. So that's where I'm based out of. But our crew handles the six parks that are within about an hour of First Landing. So yeah, we get to live in the beauty every day.
I am so excited to dive into the details of that very soon. But before we do, there's something else I want to talk about. Could you describe the journey that led to your current position with AmeriCorps? I know it has something to do with visiting all of the state parks.
That's right. Yes. So just about a year and a half ago, I'd never even heard of AmeriCorps. So I'll definitely share how I came to find out about it. But one thing that I have done every year is on January 1st, as you may know, the Virginia State Parks sponsors a first day hike. All the state parks are free admission that day, and it encourages people to just start their new year off outdoors. And it's something that I've been doing for years. So in January 1st of 2019, I trekked up to First Landing for my annual first day hike. And I was actually really inspired by seeing so many people that were out enjoying the area because it was very cold that day. And, you know, there's something about the new year, of course, that makes you really reflective. And I've never been much of a resolution person, but I did start the year thinking maybe knowing that I wasn't in the right place for myself professionally. I'm an educator. I do a lot of teaching, but I was working in communications and marketing, which I do love. I love communications, but I wasn't really feeling the passion for the organization that I was working for. And 2018 just had not been the greatest year. So I was doing my meditative hike and there's no place I'd rather be than on a trail in the woods. Like that is my happy place. So I'm on a trail and I'm thinking, you know, what I can do so that 2019 would be better for me. And I knew that one thing that was missing from the prior year was that time outdoors, like that time on the trail. And, so I started thinking, okay, I know that I know five parks that are in this area that I could like name off the top of my head, but I had no idea actually how many parks were in the state of Virginia. Had no idea. So I looked it up real quick, you know, like on my phone, how many state parks in Virginia? And I learned there were 38. So I'm like hiking and I'm thinking, and I'm like, do I want to make a resolution this year? And I just knew that that was going to be the year I was going to hike all 38 Virginia state parks. Somehow it was going to happen. So I went back home and I told my husband, who did not come with me as as per usual. He's not a big hiker. I said, hey, I know what I'm going to do this year. I'm going to hike all 38 Virginia state parks. And he just looked at me and was like, okay, well, have fun with that. I hope you do. So that was January 1st. And I literally that night sat down with the map from the Department of Conservation and Recreation, you know, trying to plot out, okay, I got to get here. I am at the very most eastern point of the state, and I've got to get all the way to the western point of the state and figure out how to do this. So, you know, I had no idea, but it would really just set me on a journey of, you know, discovering all about the resources in the state, discovering a lot about myself, and setting me on a path to actually like transition careers. So, do you want me to just to keep talking about that.
Yeah, I know. This is really fantastic. And I have to say, I have a lot of respect for the way that you were able to visit every park in less than a year. Because when I started out on my journey to visit every Virginia State Park, it was 2015 and it's now 2020 and I still have one more park left to visit. And so when I think about the last one is going to be Holiday Lake.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I know what it took for me as somebody who travels around the state frequently to be able to hit all the parks. I just can't even imagine 38 parks in, what did you do it in 10 months? I think you were done by October.
Before Halloween.
When you think about how big Virginia really is, the southwest corner of Virginia is as far west as the state of Ohio. And a lot of people don't realize that. But to get from where you are all the way out to that corner, how long does it take?
Yeah. So I did not do it that way, but I think it's about 12 hours. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. It's long. And that's the thing. You look at this shape of the state of Virginia and it is a long state, right? Uh-huh. From end to end. So a lot of the planning actually just kind of was, you know, what can I cluster together? Now, certainly there are so many parks that, because I was in this year goal, yeah, I really tried. In fact, there was one section where I did three parks in one day. So obviously I couldn't take in all of the amenities of each park in that quick trip. So I definitely have my ones that I want to return to and really get to experience on a more, in a more absorbing way and not kind of rush through. But yeah, I've really kind of looked at, okay, I've got three free days here. How many parks can I get in how far can I drive? And that's how I planned it out. And I knew I really kind of started close to home and then just gradually started working my way to the central part of the state. Knowing I would save like those far west, southwest, states for kind of the very end when it was fall and my favorite time of year, and I might have just a little bit more flexibility to do so.
It's also really beautiful down in that part of the state in the fall when the leaves are starting to change colors and you're in the mountains. It's breathtaking.
Yes, it was gorgeous. And I did notice at that time that like just my average, hike would just take so much longer because I was, stopping every 10 feet to take pictures. You know, everything is just so beautiful. Yeah.
Yes, that sounds very familiar. So what were some of the highlights of your visits to all the parks? Do you have any favorite moments?
Oh my goodness, there's so many. And I've been thinking about that just because it was really such a journey. I've never set out on anything like this. And I did pretty much all of the parks by myself. I had a couple parks where I had a friend with me, but it was a very solo experience, very introspective. And I learned a lot about myself in terms of, what I'm capable of when I'm confronted with something that scares me or challenges me. And there were just so many firsts. It was my first time staying in a yurt. So I think I want to talk about my time at Natural Tunnel because that was towards the end of my journey. And that park is, on the western part of the state. And I started out there early September. And I called this little trek my wilderness journey. So I knew I had been planning it for quite a while. And I felt like, okay, I'm gonna rent a car, I'm gonna drive out to Natural Tunnel and get my yurt, and then that's gonna be my home base for me to kind of knock out everything else on that side. So Southwest History Museum and Brakes Interstate, which is right on the Kentucky border, and all of those kind of states that parks that border Tennessee. So I had Natural Tunnel yurt as my home base. And I just remember my mom Like, she just kept saying, wait a minute, you're staying? She didn't understand the yurt. So I was trying to say, it's like, it's a really like, you know, functional tent. Like, I'm definitely protected. I'm not just like in a tent by myself, you know, I'm like, you know, it's canvas, it's fine. So, you know, it has a real bed. And I did actually, I loved the experience. It was absolutely, I highly recommend yurt camping because it's kind of glamping. It's a little fancy. It's got a bed. But you really have the sense of being outdoors. I mean, you are hearing all of the sounds around you. You're hearing all the night sounds, and you have your little campfire that you can have right outside your front porch and all of those beautiful things. But I did feel safe as just like a female by myself, you know, for 6 days. So,
right.
Yeah. So that was great. But during my time at Natural Tunnel, I did all of the things that terrified me. I actually kind of have a fear. Well, I don't kind of, I do. I have a fear of like caves, and I went caving at Natural Tunnel.
Good they for actually, you.
It was an amazing experience. They have an interpretive program there where you can go into one of the caves and, explore. I mean, at one point I was like on my belly in between two crevices, and it just was like terrifying and exhilarating and just super cool. And I also have a fear, which is silly, of chair lifts, like those, you know, things that suspend you on cables and you go, I don't know what it is. I mean, I love roller coasters, but if you just hang me somewhere, my legs are dangling on a cable, total fear. So Natural Tunnel has a huge chair lift that takes you down to the base of the tunnel. So I did all of those things in one day. I did like the cave. I did the chair lift down to the base of the tunnel. And I did their night program, which was a kind of a star program and astronomy program. A nighttime program. So again, that involved me like walking a mile or so from my yurt to where the program was at like 9 o'clock at night and walking back and just like, you know, thinking it'll be fine. And of course it was, and it was wonderful. And I like closed that day literally checking off three boxes of my things that scare me list. And so that was pretty cool.
I'm sure that felt amazing because I've had those moments too. And then when you do it, you're like, why was I so afraid of that?
Exactly.
But there's something about the outdoors that can really push your limits and challenge you in ways that other things don't. And, you know, like in your mind, you logically know that you're not putting yourself in danger because it's not the same as putting yourself in danger. It's just, I guess a mental fear. Because, you know, you can walk in the dark in the parks and it's perfectly safe and there's no reason why you should be afraid of it. But I'm terrified of the forest at night. So I'm in the same boat as you are. Like, I don't want to do it, but I've been like forcing myself little by little to do it, you know, a little more every time. And then recently I did a sunrise hike, and that means you have to start off on the trailhead long before the sun comes up. So it's challenging and it's scary. But then once you do it, it's such an amazing feeling.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I love the point that you just made to Jessica about, you know, knowing you're not putting yourself in danger, because the whole trip that I planned, I feel like I did it as responsibly, you know, as I could. And it involved a lot of research and a lot of planning. And I would never, you know, have gone to, you know, I knew with that trip, like, these are the five parks I'm going to go to. And, you know, this is exactly what I'm going to do. And I went so much as to plan, you know, the particular trails that I was going to do. And so, yeah, I mean, there's definitely, you know, planning that goes into like doing this responsibly and, you know, making sure that you're taking care of yourself and that people know where you're at and all of those important things as well. So,
yeah, absolutely. So do you have a favorite Virginia State Park?
Oh my goodness. Okay. So when I told several people that I was going to do this, everybody I told was like, oh, your favorite park is going to be Grayson Highlands. Your favorite park is going to be Grayson Highlands.
It's a good one.
And yes. And I know. And, but like in the back of my head, I was like, okay, if everybody says this, like, I'm just, it's not going to be like, I just know it. And of course, you know, I think it's up there. It's pretty amazing. I think it's tied between False Cape, which is luckily here in Virginia Beach, close to me, and then Grayson Highlands, which was just absolutely as spectacular as everyone says it is. And I think it's a combination of me going there in the fall when absolutely everything is just a postcard everywhere you look, and getting to see wild ponies. And I think what's so cool about Grayson Highlands is it has that mix of everything. It's got the elevation, it's got, you know, the mountains, it's got valley, it's got these, you know, grasslands. It's the coolest. So
yeah. And you know, I have a hard time explaining what highlands are to people who ask, especially for those who have never been down in that area. I mean, that's a pretty unique landscape mm-hmm. for Virginia because of its elevation. Mm-hmm. And so how would you describe highlands?
Yeah, it is hard to describe. I mean, I think what I loved so much there was just the variation in the, like, both the topography and the environment. So there were you'd be walking along and then there would just be like this huge outcropping of like rocks and boulders that you could just like scale and, you know, mm-hmm. just in the middle of nowhere. And then just the amazing, like, peaks. I think Mount Rogers is there, which is one mm-hmm. of actually the highest point in Virginia. And the fact that it also is our western. So Virginia State Park has two parks that intersect with the Appalachian Trail. And so Grayson Highlands is the western part and Sky Meadows is the eastern part where they intersect. So it was also cool to really actually get to see the people coming, you know, off the trail and intersect with the Appalachian Trail people that were through hiking mm-hmm. there. Describing it is I don't know. There's also a waterfall. I mean, there's just like mm-hmm. every like attraction that would get you to a state park. I feel like it is encompassed there in that area. Oh, the other thing I should mention about it is it can change. You can start out in one area wearing, you know, your shorts and a t-shirt, and then in another area need a jacket and, you know, mm-hmm. a pants and a hat because the elevation changes so much, so does the temperature. So it can actually even be snowing in one area, like in October, and then be, you know, 75 degrees in another area, all within that one park. So I think that's pretty spectacular.
And I think that's something for people to remember in general. When you go into the mountains, it's as if the mountains create their own weather. So it doesn't really mm-hmm. matter what your forecast app tells you because it can change in a moment.
Absolutely.
You need to be prepared. But I usually describe highlands to people as, you know, imagine being in the mountains, but without the deciduous forest because the trees don't grow that high. So you're up there on the mountain, but you don't have the trees around you. And so you can see forever. It feels like forever, right? Like you look around in every direction and you see the mountains in every direction. And usually anything that's growing is, you know, very low to the ground or it's, you know, a pine tree of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know,
that's conifers. A beautiful way to describe it. Yeah. Like you're absolutely right. You can, and it's got almost 360 views from whatever, you know, whatever point you're at. So
yes. And another really interesting thing about it, Mount Rogers, as you just mentioned, is the highest peak in Virginia. There is actually a rainforest at the top of Mount Rogers, which is a really unique rainforest that can only be found in Virginia on Mount Rogers because it only exists above a certain elevation. So that's really interesting to me. Did you go up to Mount Rogers when you were in Grayson Highlands?
I did a partial and then I got tuckered out and there was too much else that I wanted to see. So I was like, we will conquer you another time. Yeah.
We will have to go back and do that together because that is such an amazing hike. But you get up there and it's like walking into the Emerald City and the Wizard of Oz. Everything is green in a way you've never seen green before. And I mean, like every tree, every log, every stone, everything is growing with something green. It's really, really cool.
Well, I think that's just one of the neatest things about this state. This is definitely home to me now, but I'm a transplant to Virginia. And, you know, just the more time I spend here and the more I explore the state, I'm so appreciative of the fact that we have it all. Like you're really never more than a few hours from, you know, the ocean or the mountains, or, you know, it's got such rich resources. And that's another reason why the state parks here just have such amazing, amazing amenities. They take advantage of the natural resources.
True. And speaking of mountains to ocean, you did mention False Cape, and that is frequently mentioned as a favorite Virginia state park. Do you want to describe why it's one of your favorites?
Oh my goodness. Yes. So it's hard to even, when I say that it's in Virginia Beach, I mean, most people who are locals or have lived here their whole life, you know, have never gone to it because it doesn't even feel like Virginia Beach. You feel like you're just in a different place and you're in a different time, I think is what, is most relevant about that place. It is the least visited park in the Virginia State Park system. And it's only about 20 minutes from First Landing in Virginia Beach, which is the most visited park in the Virginia State Park system. So, 20 miles away, and they're completely different worlds. And I think, one of the reasons why it's least visited is the accessibility to it. So it literally sits at the farthest end of the ocean. Of you basically drive until you hit the water. But what you do hit is you hit Back Bay National Wildlife Refuge, which is a protected sanctuary, primarily for the protection of waterfowl. So that's kind of their big preserve area. But in order to access False Cape, you cannot do it by vehicle. You either have to go 6 miles in by foot, by bicycle, or by boat. Those are the only ways you can access False Cape. So you'd have to either, like I said, walk or, you know, go to Back Bay Wildlife Refuge, park your car, and then walk or bike the 6 miles in. So because of that, you can imagine it's a very pristine and untouched kind of wild park. It doesn't have, you know, like the campgrounds that you would see at the other parks. It has primitive campsites, and it's one of the few places that you can camp right on the beach and really experience true, like, rugged beach and, you know, a very rugged nature. I would recommend anybody who's actually setting off to do either an Appalachian Trail journey or something where they're kind of, you know, very extensive, remote backcountry hiking to get kind of a practice run at False Cape, where you're like carrying your pack in and you're really having to pack everything in and pack everything out. So
what a great recommendation. That's a great idea for people who are training, and also for people who are training to do overnight kayak trips, because you can paddle into the park.
Yes, definitely. That is on my list. I have not done that yet, but yeah. I could go on and on about False Cape. I feel like you probably have other people talk about it, because it really is special, and it has such an interesting history because it was so remote and rugged. There are remnants of old kind of settlements that were there from the 1800s and even pre 1800s, and even very cool discoveries like moonshine stills from the Prohibition era, where people were moonshining, and it's just the coolest thing. And there's so many old artifacts from different populations that called that place home, right in the woods. So it's pretty neat.
It is amazing. The first time that, or maybe not the first time, maybe the second time that I visited that park, there was a a whale that had washed up on the beach. It was dead. The staff told me they had seen it floating a couple of miles out from the beach for a couple of days, and it eventually washed up and was decomposing on the beach. And that was how often do you walk up on a decomposing whale, right?
While a lot
of people thought it was super nasty because it smelled and there was some blood in the water, like, I thought it was absolutely amazing and cool.
Such
a cool discovery, and like the inside of it, because it was baking in the sun, I guess like the gas had caused pressure and eventually it blew open, and like parts of the whale like flew down the beach a couple of miles and landed. And it was like the staff, and by the way, the staff there is incredible. They are so knowledgeable about everything maritime forest, and they are so friendly, and they love to talk to people and educate people who come to visit about the entire ecosystem there.
I can't second that enough. Absolutely. And, you know, I've had actually several rangers say, like, we are here because of you. Like, I mean, they want people to see that resource, and they are more than happy to share their knowledge of it. I mean, it just, if you're a birder, like, definitely that's an amazing place for you. But also you mentioned just like the maritime forest. I mean, that ecosystem there is incredible. And there are insects and, flora and fauna there that are, both state and globally rare, as in, like, it's maybe in the one, there are only like five other places on the earth that have that kind of ecosystem, like a G1 population, like globally rare. So it's pretty incredible. And any kind of bizarre critter that there is, I have seen it at False Cape. They have like this velvet ant, which is lots of interesting insects. And, but yeah, it's just a super special place. And it's a very quiet place too. I mean, I think that, you can find quiet, in nature, wherever you are. And it's sometimes nice to travel off the most popular trails, but there's something about False Cape where you really get the sense of just, a quiet, that's undisturbed by people. And it's because you don't have the vehicle traffic. And, it's just a lovely, lovely place. So I hope everybody can experience that.
Yeah. And if you have ever watched Survivor, especially if you're camping at False Cape, that's kind of what it feels like. You're just out there in the wilderness.
Yes.
I mean, you can see the lights of Virginia Beach, like of the city in the distance, but where you are, you feel like you're a million miles away.
Yes. And I think that's what's so incredible about it. This like last remaining stretch of wild, right there in Virginia Beach. And it's just every time I'm there, I'm like, this is why we have state parks. We have to preserve this because, I just feel like, trust me, if there was a way that could be developed, I'm sure it would be developed, so mm-hmm. I'm so grateful that it's protected in the sanctuary that it is. Yeah.
Yeah. So I want to switch tracks for a little bit because you and I could talk about the state parks for hours. This episode would never end.
I know it.
But I really do want to hear about your experience as an AmeriCorps member.
Yes, I'm actually in my second role with AmeriCorps. So in my current role, I am in a career development program serving as a natural resource ranger with AmeriCorps.
And why don't you maybe describe a little bit about AmeriCorps in general? Because AmeriCorps members are not just assigned to the state parks. They actually do a large variety of roles all across the state and even all across the country. Do you want to talk a little bit about AmeriCorps as a whole?
I'd be happy to. And it was not something that was actually even on my radar. And I'll tell you a little bit about how I found out about it. But the way I describe it to others is AmeriCorps very simply is kind of like the domestic Peace Corps. So, it's people that serve. It's a national service term, and people serve as they're needed in various roles. So there might be a track of AmeriCorps that is just focused on underserved communities. communities that need help with urban farming or food insecurity issues, like teaching them how to grow gardens. There's an aspect of AmeriCorps that is just focused on literacy and, you know, bringing fundamental reading skills into the classrooms for children. So lots of different aspects. What I am serving on is the Virginia Service and Conservation Corps, VSCC, which focuses on providing service to Virginia state parks. So if you have a passion for serving in any way or giving to the community, there's certainly a place for you in AmeriCorps, you know, whichever route you're interested in. You can do many different things.
That's right. And so there are AmeriCorps members assigned to multiple parks around Virginia right now and doing all kinds of different things. Every time I look at your Facebook page, I am so jealous because the things that you are doing on a daily basis are incredible. Like one day there's a picture of you, like, you know, knee deep in waders in a swamp holding snakes or, you know, picking up snapping turtles. And then the next day you're like holding a chainsaw and you're taking down trees and you do the coolest stuff. So, you know, tell me, what is there a typical day for you or is that just typical? I mean, what does your day look like?
Typical. And all of that is true. And all of that is like shocking to my family and and to my spouse. And it even surprises me sometimes to see how much I've grown and stretched with this opportunity, because none of that came to me naturally. So with AmeriCorps, like I said, the natural resource crew, I serve with District 1. There are six districts across the state of Virginia. And I think one of the main things I learned as going through this process is that Virginia, a lot of the work that gets done to maintain the parks and help with the trails and just many of the necessary day-to-day things that have to get done for Virginia State Parks really relies on an AmeriCorps crew to do that. There just simply are not enough resources for the main ranger staff to do all of the things that need to get done. So this is where the AmeriCorps folks can be very, very valuable. I'm serving a 9-month term. I started in January and I'm like coming up on my 1 month left, which is a little bittersweet. But during that 9 months, they work to complete an extensive list of projects of things that just need to be done for the parks. So in my crew, like I said, I serve six different parks, even though we're based at First Landing. We spend a lot of time at False Cape. We handle Kipta Peak, which is on the across the Chesapeake Bay Bridge Tunnel on the eastern shore. We handle Chipokes Plantation, Belle Isle State Park. I'm forgetting some.
Is York River District One?
Yes, which I love. Yep. So we try to complete a lot of the trail work and maintenance that needs to be done at the parks. We do a lot of invasive species control, which is huge in First Landing and False Cape because there are marsh and water environments. Phragmites, which is, if you didn't know, you would just think is this lovely kind of tall, grassy, reed-looking thing, which I'm sure you've seen on the side of the road, but it's incredibly invasive. And if we don't work to control those, that growth, it will literally it will multiply like crazy and crowd out all of the native species that need to grow. So we do that. We do documenting of those species I mentioned, the rare and the rare state and globally rare species. We identify and track them. We have a turtle tracking project. We document any new snakes and species that we find. It just goes on and on. We do a lot of pollinators, pollination fields. And it's neat to, as the seasons change, you know, early February was the time to go out to each of the parks and, you know, dig up the fields and use a tractor and start spreading the seed of all of the native wildflowers. And then 3 months later, we go back to that field and it's amazing. We get to see see the fruits of our labor. We get to see the black-eyed Susans and the coreopsis and, you know, all of those native plants coming to bloom. And the field that was just down to soil is now alive with pollinators. So that's super cool. Oh, there's honestly so much. And the more I've learned about it, the more I'm like, wow, like these, you know, the parks just could not do what they do without this volunteer crew that serves. So that's some of it.
Yeah. So what happens with the data that you're collecting? Does it go somewhere? Or how does it get used?
Yeah, a lot of it does. So actually there's been three projects, maybe four, there's a lot. We did a whole project where we were at False Cape working with the department. Well, it was DGIF, but they just went through a rebrand, a name change. I think they're, do you know what that is, Jessica? They changed
it
to like.
I do, and it's slipping my mind.
The way they changed the name, I was really happy with because I felt like it suited.
It made more sense, but now we can't remember it, so it's not that helpful.
But we got to work side by side with those biologists and researchers on.
You know,
a
is it the Department of Wildlife or?
Yeah, the Department of Wildlife.
That's right.
Thank you.
Okay, so I didn't mean to interrupt what you were saying, but it just popped into my head.
Yeah, and I'm glad you did. Yeah. So Department of Wildlife Resources. So we worked alongside the biologists there to do a snake fungal disease study at False Cape. And much similar to, I think maybe some of your listeners know about the white nose syndrome that's occurring with bats, which is a huge problem. There's a snake fungal disease that's happening with snakes, which is unfortunately affecting the way that, I mean, it affects their face and their little their mouth so much so that they can't eat and they will perish.
That's so sad.
So it is so sad. And so we would find we would literally go out there and just searching the wild for snakes. And I cannot even tell you how much that idea terrified me. Like I would just say, okay, just grab a snake, just grab a snake if you see one. But, that's basically what we did. And that took a lot of me like literally sitting down each night and reading the book on Virginia snakes from cover to cover so I could learn as much as I could before I had to do this task. But we would collect the snakes, swab them, do a full swab, and test them for the disease, and all of that would get sent up, you know, for research to track, like how many species are we identifying with this? Is it isolated to just one type of snake or all the snakes? And that's a huge thing. And then gypsy moth data, where we set traps for those. Ambrosia beetles, we set traps for those and collect the data, and that gets sent to Department of Forestry. So through this program, I've been able to work, like I said, with Department of Wildlife Resources, Department of Forestry, the Natural Heritage and Nature Conservancy, a lot of organizations all work hand in hand to make sure that we're doing what we can to protect the ecosystem and know what's in there.
So it sounds like you're really enjoying this, and it definitely looks like you're really enjoying this. Would you recommend this program to others, or who do you think would be a good fit for AmeriCorps with Virginia State Parks?
Yes. So I am absolutely enjoying this, and I'll backtrack for just a little bit. So as I mentioned, I had set off on that, you know, journey. I was going to hike all 38 Virginia State Parks, and because I was planning all that out, I was on the Department of Conservation and Recreation page website pretty frequently, kind of mapping things out. And I happened to run across a blog post that said, you know, spend your summer outdoors, serve with AmeriCorps and state parks. And I clicked on it. I had no idea what AmeriCorps was. So I clicked on it And I quickly learned, you know, that there's multiple programs. There's a summer program, which is what I did last year in 2019, for interpretive park interpreters. And they're the ones that give all those amazing educational programs to guests using the natural resources and historical resources of the park. And then there's the career program, which I'm on right now. So never in a million years would I have thought, like, that January 1st when I was hiking, that it would lead me to literally like applying for this position, you know, leaving my job and starting my journey with AmeriCorps. So I'm probably not your average AmeriCorps person. I am, I am on the older side of the spectrum. But so it appeals definitely to college students who maybe are transitioning, doing a gap year between college and profession, or just really trying to figure out what they want to do. But it also appeals to someone like me who just was not necessarily satisfied in the career path I was on and really needed a change to explore what I am truly passionate about. And then also on this AmeriCorps journey, there were also members serving that were retirees. I met a gentleman last summer who was a lifelong career government, just retired from his career in DC and started to serve in AmeriCorps, and became a master naturalist and, you know, all kinds of things. So I would say it's wide open. There's no maximum age limit. You just have to be 17 to start, at least. And if you have the passion and interest for, you know, doing national service, being able to give back to the park system, and you know, doing some labor, then it really is for anyone. Yeah.
And there are so many different opportunities within AmeriCorps across Virginia that anybody who has an interest in serving for what is it? Did you say 8 months, 9 months?
Yeah, so the program I'm in right now is January to September. So yeah, I think it ends up being about just right at 9 months.
Okay. So if you have 9 months where you would love to learn a new skill set, meet new people, explore new things, this is really a great program to look into. And where should people go if they're interested in finding out more about AmeriCorps?
Yeah, absolutely. So I would start out on the DCR webpage, so dcr.virginia.gov. From there, you would look at state parks, and there is an entire section at the bottom of the page that talks about job opportunities and AmeriCorps specifically. That would be, I know they're recruiting for their 2021 service period, so definitely now is the time to start looking into it. And, you know, if you go through the process and, you know, get selected, you have the potential of serving anywhere across the state. So it's pretty neat. Yeah. And then I wanted to also mention, Jessica, you talked about like learning a new skill. And I can't even tell you how invaluable this has been. I know I knew when I started serving last year that this was definitely the direction I wanted to kind of pivot my career in. So I needed to learn as much as possible about the environment and the scientific processes involved in this in order to get on that path, because I don't have a science background. And this has allowed me to become, I'm actually a certified Sawyer's apprentice now. I work with chainsaws and bobcats. I'm a registered pesticide applicator and technician. I'm a certified interpretive guide. I've been certified in wilderness and survival first aid and trauma. And all of those things were provided as part of my training. So to be able to come out of this program with a pretty long list of certifications, oh, as well as a wildland firefighter,
right.
which is pretty cool.
That's where you and I met, I believe, right?
There is. And I didn't mention that, but that's another big aspect of resources. It's, you know, prescribed and controlled burns that help populate the forest in other ways and reduce the dead leaves and open up the canopy. So many things go into, you know, maintaining the parks and the ecosystems there. And it's just been awesome to get to be a part of it.
So I think we're going to have to wrap this up pretty soon, which makes me very sad because I really just want to keep talking about AmeriCorps and Virginia State Parks.
Yes, I could definitely talk forever about it.
But before I go, I want to ask you, as somebody who has done a lot of hiking and spends a lot of time in the outdoors, and especially as somebody who's, you know, doing burns and collecting snakes and all the cool things that you do, is there one piece of gear that you can't live without?
I've definitely been thinking about this question because when I do set out, I have a overly detailed checklist of everything I need to take because I definitely like to be prepared. But I'll be honest, this is a really simple thing, but bugs love me. I am like a bug magnet. So any type of bug repellent is crucial to my enjoyment of my hike and my outdoor time. So I've tried them all. I now use a very ranger approved and certified bug spray, Picaridin. That's like, I do not leave without it. And for me, honestly, it just makes the biggest difference between like enjoying my time or being, you know, completely eaten alive and miserable. Bug spray.
Especially down in the swamp where you are, but you know, that's safer than DEET too. So,
safer than DEET.
Yeah. That's something that can be recommended safely. And what is your next big Virginia outdoor adventure? You've been to all the state parks. There's got to be something next. Do you have anything planned?
Yes. I do. There's two things on the agenda. So early October, I'm doing a girls trip to hike Old Rag. So we'll be doing that, which is very exciting. Mm-hmm. And I still have not done Virginia's Triple Crown. So I've done McAfee's Knob, but there's still the two other points of the Triple Crown that I have not done. So I don't know if I'll be able to do it this fall, but definitely in the future.
Yeah. Well, all of those hikes that you just mentioned are some of the most epic in the state and also some of the most popular, but for good reason. They're difficult, but they're beautiful and they are absolutely worth it when you get to the summit.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, have fun on those. I hope they work out for you. I hope the pandemic does not put a wrench in your plans.
Yeah. I think that there's a silver lining to the pandemic a little bit in that I think a lot of people have really turned to their outside resources and have been to state parks that they haven't, you know, I know a lot in my area, there's been a lot of people that live within 5 miles of the park and had never even set foot in it aside from, you know, without the pandemic. So it brought people outdoors. It brought people closer to nature. And I really kind of am looking at the silver lining of that. And I hope that people will continue to journey outside and into state parks.
Well, Kendra, this has really been a pleasure. And I hope that maybe you'll come back and talk to us in the future about how the AmeriCorps program has worked out for you. And we could chat some more about your trips that you have coming up and all the fun things about Virginia Outdoors.
I'd love to. Thanks so much for having me, Jessica.
Thank you. Thanks for joining us for this week's episode. Be sure to subscribe to Virginia Outdoor Adventures on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you may listen to podcasts. If you enjoy the show, please rate, review, or share with a friend, and follow us on our Facebook and Twitter pages. Until next week, adventure on.